Love Osho Podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Manand Pratibha. Pratibha took sannyas in 1974 and is a singer, songwriter and teacher. Pratibha has been leading voice workshops for the past 25 years and plays music at many Osho festivals and events around the world. Pratibha is known for the Heart Dance, an in-depth journey exploring the voice, freeing creative expression, as well as expanding the vehicle for introspection, peace and healing. Pratibha, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Swaram.
Okay, great. So to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, it's a long story. But the very, very first time, actually, that I met Osho was in Tehran, in what is now called Iran. And it was a very mystical meeting because I was traveling with my boyfriend at the time across overland in 73 in the autumn, and we were going to India with public transport. And I was standing in line to check in at a hotel called Amir Kabir, where many young people stayed overnight there or for a few days in Tehran. And I was standing in line and I turned around and there was what I didn't know at the time, but it was a sannyasin. It was German Kirti and he was standing behind me and my eyes fell on the mala and it sounds a little bit strange, but it actually happened that I entered through the mala or whatever. It was very, very strange, but I met with Osho and it was like a very warm embrace and it lasted maybe for a split second, but what felt like a very long time. And when I came back to the moment in the line, I said to him, "Oh my God, who is that?" And he was just smiling and saying, "That's Bhagwan." And I, "Oh, where is he?" And he said, "He's in Bombay." And then the strange things happened that I just turned around and sort of fell back into my life and didn't really think of it. I was not looking for a master. I was not looking for, I was just a traveler. But I was drawn to India and I had asked my boyfriend, he had been to India before, if we could go there before we settled too much in Denmark, because I would love to see a temple. And I didn't even know what a temple was. I just had this pull, which has been the story of my life, this pull. And I saw him again in Mashhad, which is the second big city in Iran, this Kirti standing across the road. We never spoke, but he just stood there with his little knowing smile, which I didn't know what that was all about, but I just felt as if he was an old friend. Yeah, and then we went on to India. It's going to be a long story. I don't know if you want the whole story.
Well, it's a wonderful story. It's a great start. So I don't mind to hear the whole thing. I mean, and then, so you decided to go to India. So tell us from when you arrived in India.
And so we were definitely not going to Goa because that's where all the hippies were going. And we were just, you know, wanted to do our own thing and meet the people and all this kind of stuff. But then when we came to Bombay, it was so hot that we had to go to Goa. And so we took the boat there and then we stayed. In those days, Anjuna was just one long beach with nothing, a chai shop in each end. And we all lived there naked on the beach and just slept there on the sand. And every morning we saw these people down at the end of the beach and doing strange things. They were shouting and jumping and going totally bananas. And it was every morning around 6 o'clock. And we thought, wow, what, you know, they're really crazy. And at the same time, you know, it felt like, wow, looks like fun, looks like something that you actually would like to do. But we never went there. But then one morning I went with my bucket to the well in Goa. They have these beautiful, big, open, round wells. And I was about to throw my bucket in the well, and a guy came climbing up from the well in a pair of orange shorts and these beads around his neck. And it turned out to be American Vedanta, who, by the way, spoke fluent Danish, and we didn't speak very much English, so it was really nice to speak with him. And so he invited us to join what was, which we know now, of course, as the dynamic meditation. And we started going there every morning. It was amazing. And then he said, why don't you come with us to Mount Abu? In January, there will be a meditation camp, they called it, and Bhagwan will be there, and 400 people in orange, and anything can happen. And this anything can happen was the key, that just we, how could we not want to come? So we went there, and that was starting in, I think it was 10 days or 9 days from the 10th or 11th of January 1974.
January 1974 is even before Osho settled in Pune, before the commune in Pune was born. And also you said that Osho was conducting a 9 days meditation camp. So I think this is really, really interesting for me to hear about what was going on, because most of the people nowadays who come across Osho, they associate Osho as a man with a long white beard sitting on a podium giving talks. But Osho as a young man used to conduct these very intense and powerful meditation camps in the mountains in various places across India. So yeah, tell us a little bit about what was going on there.
It was just totally amazing. First of all, it is an amazing area, and it was held. The camp was up at the grounds of a hotel, and there was about 2 kilometers walk, I think, up there. And we were staying in the village, and the first instruction was that we should be in silence the whole time. I think it was 10 days, so I can't really remember. I think something like that, 9 or 10 days, and or maybe 8. And then total silence, not speak with anybody for all the days, and to start the day by not even opening your eyes, just wake up and stretch the body like a cat, and then to laugh. And so in the hotel we stayed, many people in a different rooms of the hotel, and you would hear, you know, early morning, like, people trying to laugh. And then it got so hilarious that we were all laughing so loud because it was so funny to hear everybody trying. And it became real laughter, and it was a wonderful way to get out of bed. And then we would walk up. It was pretty cool in the morning, and we would walk up to the hotel. There was one place where there was beautiful temples we walked by, and then there was one huge tree full of monkeys, which was really so much fun. Anyway, it was pretty, I think it was dark in the morning, and so we'd come up there, and as far as I remember, we started with the lecture. But the thing was that me and my boyfriend, we didn't understand much of what he said. And so we just listened, and then every once in a while, he would say Charlie Brown, which was a comic strip figure that he used in his jokes, or Mullah Nasruddin, lots of Mullah Nasruddin jokes. But most of the other talk we didn't really get, but it was just amazing to be there in that energy. And then he would, at the end, he would lean over to the little bit closer to the mic and say, "Now get ready for the meditation." And then it was dynamic. And this "now get ready for the meditation," it was just like, everybody just gave all. It was so total, you know, it was just amazing. And he was guiding the dynamic meditation. And he would say things like, "Keep going," or "only a few more minutes," or, you know, so you just couldn't help but just give it all your energy. And when the stop came, he would sometimes say, I remember very clearly, he would say, "And now you feel the bliss descending," or something like that. And I didn't know what bliss, I just remember the word, but I didn't know what it meant. And I sort of figured out that descending meant something that was coming down. So I was often just standing there waiting for this something to come down on me, and which is hilarious now thinking of it. But anyway, and then personally, I just remember always crying at the end. A lot of things happen with people after the meditation, and there would be a long moment. He would leave before we opened the eyes, and there was always a lot of stuff happening with people, you know, kind of aftermath of the meditation, because it was so intense. And then I shall go through the day, maybe.
Absolutely. Look, I'm just all ears. I really want to know every single detail of whatever was happening there.
Okay, and the band, I'll describe that in a minute. So then I think we went for lunch or something. We'd go down again. And then there was, I don't know if it was every day, there was a Devavani, which was we were to go out and sit on the hillside by ourselves in nature and just talk gibberish to the sky, look at the sky and just express. And then after, I don't know, half an hour or something, then we just close our eyes and sit there. And in the afternoon at 4 o'clock, I think it was, there was the kirtan, which for me was just, it was just amazing, because it was this woman called Taruma, Indian woman, fantastic singer, just an energy power, just amazing woman. And she had this band of people with all kinds of percussion and drums and a harmonium and whatever it was. They were so powerful. And every day we sang exactly the same bhajan. And every day it was totally magic. It was like what's now called Nataraj in a way, because it was just starting very slowly. And we all started singing and moving the body, and you just have your eyes closed. And then you just dance and dance and dance, like totally wet at the end. And then you just flop on the floor and stay there and sink into the silence. They were just amazing, these musicians, and her, the way she would just pump it up. And for me to discover that celebration and music and spirituality and meditation, that it was all part, I mean, for me, that is the most amazing gift that we have got from Osho, along with a million other things. But this, that the music serves the silence, is and that the movement serves the silence, that in the most beautiful way, and so alive and so natural and so deep, and it's just fantastic. And then the people that wanted to see him personally, they, at that time, you could line up, I think it was around this, at the same time, you could line out outside his room, and have a one-on-one meeting with him. If you wanted to take sannyas, or if you were sannyasin already, you could have a talk with him. And that was open for an hour or two, I don't remember. Maybe it was the same amount of time then. And then there was dinner time. And then in the evening, we had the most amazing meditation, which was, I don't know what they, if they call it tratak, but this meditation was that we were jumping. I don't remember how it started, but at some point we were jumping the whole time. Maybe it was 45 minutes or something, extremely long time. We were jumping with our arms up and just having eye contact with him. And he would do this energy transfer, or I don't really know what to call it, but it was just 400 people flying into space or something. It was very intense. There was this amazing trust or energy of, I don't know if there was one single person holding anything back. That's what it felt like anyway. This and somehow I, maybe that it was always like that when we were with him, also in the commune later on, and that somehow the people that were drawn to him were people that just didn't have another option, you know, like just full on, full on, which is amazing to be in a community or in a gathering where everybody is full on. It's like an orchestra somehow, that just everybody is looking forward to play, and the music is fantastic because of the connection, even if we never talked with each other, or many of us didn't even know each other. Personal story, you know, listening to your podcast, I had a time in Portugal in February where I discovered these podcasts of yours, Swaram, and it was, I just realized, my God, you know, so many people I know, and I don't know their story at all, because we never spent time to exchange the stories, you know. It was more what is happening now, what are we doing now, and I love that.
Wow, that is so amazing. So thank you so much for giving us a picture of that time at Mount Abu, which I think probably is the most fascinating for me, the most mysterious, the most also personal and intimate with Osho, because, you know, 400 people are a lot of people, but still it's not thousands like later on in, you know, in Pune and Oregon, etc. So there are so many things that I want to ask and curiosities, but I think I just want to make a remark. When you said that during the dynamic meditation, Osho was guiding it and encouraging you to go deeper, and also during the Tatrak meditation. And there are some pictures and videos, thanks God, which give a little bit of a sense of what was going on there. So there are some recording of what you just described. So I had a little bit of in my mind as you were talking, I could refer to that. I think the key element was Osho's presence. Yeah. Whereas, you know, sometimes there are people just say, I just do the dynamic as a technique. Yes, it's powerful, but the presence of Osho there, I think, made a huge difference, because as you said, people could just have this feeling of being total and just let go and trust in this man who was there doing some kind of things that we don't understand, as you said, with this energy, with his hands. I don't know what he's doing, but something is happening. And then he said that he would leave after the technique, and then lots of people crying. Maybe, yeah, can you tell us a bit more of what was happening to you personally after a meditation and in this crying? Was it just kind of a release, some kind of emotions coming up? You know, maybe tell us a bit more about that in your internal process.
Well, you know, it's difficult to... I didn't really have, you know, an understanding. I had an experience, but I wasn't, you know, I was totally new to the whole thing. But things would happen. Like, for me, it was, I had this amazing connection with, after dynamic, it happened almost every morning. I would look across and there was this, I can't think of his name. He's not on this earth anymore, but we had some kind of connection. And after the meditation, we just walked towards each other and we would hold each other and I would just cry and cry and cry and cry. It was like a lid was taken off or a release or an old, I don't even know what it was. I didn't speculate because I didn't really, I was not in that mindset of speculating or analyzing or trying to understand what was happening. I was just experiencing and I just went with it because I had no sort of judgments about it. Or you know how the innocent, when the seeker first starts, there are so many magic things happening because you have no filter, you have no expectation, you have no box that you're throwing it into, or a mind coming in and saying, oh, this and this is what you're experiencing, you know, which comes later and can be really an obstacle. There's something very beautiful with the at the very beginning, because you just have an openness. If you find a place where your trust can open, then it is just totally magic.
Well, then at this point, I would like to share with you that just this morning, as I was going through the notes and thinking, you know, what kind of question, preparing a bit for the interview, I listened to one of your songs and then I started just crying. And I don't know. And if you ask me what was going on in me, I wouldn't be able to tell. But I felt like it wasn't a cry of sadness. It was more of the heart and this feeling of love and connection. And of course, I think of Osho. When I say Osho energy, I don't know exactly what it means, but I feel like the heart moves. And I was really feeling like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
So you mentioned before Taruma. I've heard about her, and I think there are some videos as well with and recordings with her voice and her music. When there are these bhajans, I think you said, they are incredibly powerful. And sometimes I use them, and again, you know, the energy, I feel like there is some kind of recording, not just of this voice and the music, but also that experience and energy which can still travel through those notes and recordings. You know, I feel like it's to say something about just talking about her. Did you know her? Did you speak with her? Do you know anything? We never mentioned Taruma, but I want to just express my gratitude for the beautiful songs, music that I still enjoy today.
No, I didn't know her. I didn't know her. I just, you know, she has been a very, very, very big inspiration for me. But I never knew her, and I saw her again. I met her, you know, on the ranch. She was in Oregon at some point. I don't know much about her life. I don't think she had the most easy life. I don't want to pass on stories because I don't really know what is what. But she was definitely a channel for him for a while there in the very beginning. That's for sure. And she was also the one that later on did the gachamis for us, the prayer, you know, the gachamis. I don't know if you know about that, but that was something we did on the ranch.
Yes,
I think
yes.
Already, I don't know if it started on the ranch or we started it in Pune, I can't remember, but she was the singer that sort of sang the first part and then we repeat. So she had another role there as well.
Okay, well, just again, expressing gratitude and sending love to Taruma. Just take this opportunity. So in terms of kirtan, that played a big part in your life. Kirtan impressed you and shaped your life.
Yeah, it influenced me because it was this mix of this wildness and the silence. Using singing and rhythm and this celebration, and then at the same time, not just celebrating, wah, 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 you know, like really as a means to go to silence. That's what really hit home somehow, because in a way, it just felt like home, you know, it felt the most natural and which somehow became one of the reasons why I was so very, very happy to offer heart dances over a period of 25 years now, was that, you know, to have that space of abandon, you know, like really kind of sing out and move and feel the natural movement in the body, and then to enter the silence in a very natural and easy way, you know, and that's where we're going, you know, that, yeah, like the most natural, like the river, you know, when it's full of rocks and movement and noise, and then smooth and soft and vulnerable.
Yeah, that's a beautiful image. And I think it fits Osho's approach very well, because yes, you know, I think different times I heard Osho saying that his approach is not like the willpower yoga type of approach that you put effort to achieve a goal, whereas it's more of a relaxing and letting go and things happen and flow. So it's more like you described. But I definitely want to hear and talk more about the voice workshops you do today. But before I forget, I want to ask you about your personal meetings with Osho. So you also said that in Mount Abu, you could access him personally. And so what was the personal guidance from Osho to you?
Yeah, well, every night, actually, me and my boyfriend, we broke our silence and whispered to each other, "Are you going to take sannyas?" And I don't know. So the last day, I just got ready and took a bath and got my clean clothes and walked up the hill to go and see him and to ask for sannyas. And when I got up to the hotel, my boyfriend came walking out and he already had a mala, and we had not talked about it. And it was so wonderful. And he said, just go and take a deep breath before you go in, and because I was quite nervous. And then so I went, and I was the very last person on the very last day, the 19th of January. And I knocked on the door. He said, "Come in." And he was sitting on a cushion on the floor. And he said, "I've been waiting for you," and which I think he said to more than one, but it was so wonderful to hear. And I came in, and it was so amazing because it was really as if we met again after a long, long time. It was so wonderful. And I was halfway towards his cushion, and then he said, Go out and find your friend." So I went out and got my friend, and then we went in together, and we just sort of plopped down on the floor, and we all held hands in a little circle and looked at each other and smiled. And it was just like, here we are again. It was so amazing. It was a timeless moment, really. And I just didn't want to take my hand out of his hand. And he was started writing down my name. I can even see on the paper today that it moved, but I didn't want to let go of his hand so he could hold on to the paper. And I guess I'm still holding that hand. It is so amazing because this moment is so alive even now. And then he had me repeat my boyfriend's name 3 times. I don't really know why, because it's so easy to say Sangeet. It means music. I had much more difficulty in pronouncing my own name, but I had to repeat this Sangeet, Sangeet. I say it 3 times. And then he asked, we told him that we were going to go back to the island of Bornholm where we lived in the countryside. And he said, "Very good." And then we were very shy, but we wanted to ask him if he would teach us Tantra, because we had read this Tantra magazine. There was some kind of Osho magazine, or I don't know what it was, but it was circulating in Goa, and it was a very beautiful description of the tantric way of lovemaking. And he said, "Well, you come and see me in Bombay." And very mysteriously, I mean, maybe not so mysteriously, but very, very strong for me, when he said that, he looked straight at me and he said, "You come see me in Bombay." And in a split second, I felt, no, no, no. And I think a part of me just knew that this was not just play, you know. and a part of me was fighting for my life. And we went out, and they were all so amazing. There was his cousin, I think, or sister, or some family member. She was giving me a special gift with some spicy balls. And they were all so loving and sweet with us, and it was just amazing. And then at the same time, I felt, oh, I'm not ready to be part of any club. This was after, you know, after I was not in his room anymore, the next day maybe, and it was the end of the camp, and I could see the English people sitting in a circle talking about theater, and all these people was talking about how to spread the word about Osho, and I don't think anybody knew at the time that he would already be settling in Pune in April of that year, and we were in January, so it was just a few, 3-4 months before the whole thing started in Pune. And I felt very much like I didn't belong to that group of. I was really there for the meditations and my own experience. I was not looking for any kind of organization of any kind or a family, or at least I didn't feel like that. I guess I felt I belonged to the family of travelers, or I don't really know. I belong to the universe, but not to a group of people. And so we just moved on, and we went back, but we went back to Goa, and we moved into the Sanya's house. There was a house there, and we did meditations, and we were there for a while, and then we were heading up to Nepal and ended up going back to Denmark and not going to see him in Bombay. And I was really feeling like, oh God, no. And it wasn't till I think it was a year or a year and a half later where we lived in a place called the Paradise, which was really a paradise. And I was wondering, why am I feeling that something is missing? And then my boyfriend was discovering this primal therapy and reading about Yano, and it was just like, he has to do this primal therapy. So we contacted the Sanya's center in Copenhagen, and the guy, Arvind, who was running the center at the time, he wrote a very small note back, and he just wrote, why don't you do dynamic meditation? And it was like, oh, what was it that we were doing there in India? And then we started doing dynamic every morning, and in those days we didn't have tapes. I didn't even know if they existed for the meditation. So we would use free jazz, you know, Pharoah Sanders and John Coltrane on the record player, which is very wild music. And we would use that as music for our dynamic meditations. And a few months later, we did our own meditation camp on my father's farm. He didn't live there, but he owned the farm where my grandma grew up, and we borrowed that and did a meditation camp, and then everything fell into place, and we sort of discovered what we had discovered. And we did this meditation camp with the guy who had climbed up from that well, Vedanta, who lived in Copenhagen. Him and Sangeeta and me, we organized this beautiful meditation camp with the meditations and Deva Kripa and Sajati and different people doing workshops. It was just fantastic. And half a year later, we were in Pune.
Okay, so eventually you did join the club or group, even though it's not a club and not a group.
In a big way, but then it happened more like naturally. It was just a fact, you know, it was a fact that was my family and that was my, you know, where I belonged.
Okay, so coming closer to your present day life, you mentioned before that you have been facilitating voice workshops and something called the Heart Dance for nearly kind of 24 years. And you traveled all over the world. You traveled in Europe and various Osho festivals and gatherings. So I guess for me, the question is, you experienced the essence of Kirtan with an alive master. Those moments in Mount Abu and then also in Pune, you lived that like the real deal, the real thing. So how do you transmit and pass on that real experience you had nowadays in your workshops?
Yeah, it's a mystery, you know. Somehow through our own meditation and therapy and ashram work and all what we went through, and this mysterious something that Osho has become part of us. And there, it is not an effort, you know, it is not something we do. It's not, it's something we are, you know, all of us who, there is a certain flavor. And I see that again and again, that people recognize the flavor, although our expressions are so various and so different. You know, one person is writing a book, one person is singing, one person is doing therapy, one person is, I don't know, making love Osho interview. You know, it is a very mysterious thing, but it's a very, it's just how it is. It's a mystery. There is a certain flavor. I don't know what to say about it. It just is like that. And I have been very aware of it all the way through, that when people come and say, oh, it was so fantastic, I just know that it was not my doing. It was not, you know, it is, it sounds so kind of, I don't know what it sounds like, but it is a sort of a channeling, or it is a sort of an essence that is just effortlessly evident, or I don't know the words even to use. And I just feel incredibly fortunate to have an expression, because for me it's sort of, it's a way to say thank you to the universe, or to Osho, to life itself. It's a way to express the gratefulness that, and the mystery. It is such a mystery that why did he, you know, me and Lina, my very, very old friend, who was actually also at the camp there in Bornholm, and we are friends forever. We often say, you know, why me? I was just some little person growing up in the most boring place. And it's like we won the lottery, or we were born in the time. We just happened to be born in the time, and grace was just showered on us in such a flood of abundance that it's just mind-blowing. And it still is. It's still mind-blowing, and it's still sort of, everything else is just extra cream on the cake, you know.
So for me, when you say these things, first of all, I feel, you know, a big connection, and I feel like happiness inside. But then at the same time, I feel like, you know, you guys won that lottery when you were young, and now lots of sannyasins who are with Osho are passing away. So I feel like that fragrance, that essence, that grace that was showering on you, is it gonna go when you guys go, or is it going to be alive and carry on? And if so, how do you see this happening?
Well, you know, I don't think it will ever disappear. It will, might take other forms, but people like you, for example, you are smitten. You know, you are. And I see that, for example, in the Osho Festival in Portugal, where people are taking sannyas, and it is such a mystery that, you know, people feel him, even though they don't know what it is that they are feeling, you know, or they relate to Osho, even though it, I don't know how to explain it. It's a mystery. And I don't think, you know, life never ends. Life will never end. And it's the same with the essence of all the great masters in the, all through time, will never disappear. They just become part of the formless in a way. And but I can't imagine that, you know, when I have young people joining the heart dance, for example, even kids, you know, they are so present and they just sort of, their heart gets taken by the energy. And it just feels so eternal somehow. It's nothing new and it's nothing old. It's nothing, you know, I think even with Osho, you know, in a strange way, I think, yeah, I don't know what to say. I'm blank. I don't know what to express. You know, I can't imagine that it sort of fizzles out. You know, it's just a matter of whether you want it or not. And he even said that. He said, you know, to whatever extent you are available, I am available to you. So it's like, I'm sure loads of older sannyasin can relate to the fact that sometimes you feel him less and sometimes you feel him more. It's all up to your own availability. And maybe you feel that too, Swaram.
Yes, I know the answer inside my heart, but I want to hear it from you.
I think it's just I think it's what is actually called eternal, but I'm not sure. It's such a big word to use.
Okay.
You know, I always heard him say that life can be a never-ending journey into bliss. That is so amazing.
I love it.
Like that in Neo, you know, on the wall. That is actually possible, you know. It is possible. And just to have that as a possibility, that is just awesome.
Yeah, life with Osho is fun and is blissful, no doubt. Okay, Pratibha, so we are heading towards the end and I have three final questions. So the first question is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, it all depends. You know, I've lived so many different places and spaces and countries that it depends a little bit on where I am. But these days, you know, I sort of stretch like a cat, like the old Mount Abu way, as I wake up. I take a long time to wake up. I lay in bed and just enjoy the bed holding me. And then I get up, I open all the windows and doors, and then I drink a very big glass of water. And then I make my coffee, and then I have my coffee meditation like you talked with other people. I'm also a morning coffee meditator.
Okay, welcome to the team. Or maybe I join you in the team because I'm younger, I come later, but I am part of the coffee meditation club.
Great. And I light some candles and I just make it all beautiful around me. I'm very hooked on beauty and aesthetics. And then I sit and here where I live now, I have the garden with the most amazing big trees. And I love to sit and look at the trees and just sort of land on earth in a slow way.
Okay, so the second question is, apart from the coffee meditation, what's your favorite? What's your favorite meditation and why?
Oh, that's Kundalini for sure. And the reason why, I think it's totally such a wonderful meditation because it's got everything. It's got the move. It's got the shaking up of all the stuck energy and the dance and the sitting. And the sitting part of the music I have heard hundreds and hundreds of times. And every time I just enjoy it so much to listen to, and it has a deep effect on me. And it's my favorite of Osho's meditations.
The last question is, you live the Osho experiment. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today?
Well, what does it mean? I mean, you know, it's the core of my being. It's the essence of my life. I can't imagine, you know, I was 22 when I met Osho, and I can't in my wildest fantasy imagination imagine what my life would have been without. So it's just, you know, that's just how it is. I don't know what else to say. It means, you know, that I have this tree inside that I just sit by, and it's always available. It means everything. It is a treasure beyond what I could imagine.
Okay, so on these wonderful notes, we can end this very enriching, elevating, and nourishing conversation and chat. So Pratibha, thank you so much for sharing your story, especially the time in Mount Abu, the early days. I think that's fascinating for me. And thanks for sharing your love for Osho.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. One day we will meet maybe in Risk or something.
Absolutely. Yes, I love Risk. It's one of my favorite places. And as soon as we are able to move around the planet Earth as we used to before this crazy situation, definitely I want to meet you in person, you know, really feel like a big connection.
And I just want to, you know, at the end, just thank you for what you're doing. I think it's wonderful. I think it's so wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you. And thanks to all of you who were with Osho for doing what you have done and for being happy to share your stories. It's so enriching my life. So thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.